You're listening to the National Radio Club's After Dark Number 4. This is tape number 4, and this is side 1. Many of us have not had the chance to speak with someone as knowledgeable on the subject of AM radio as, say, Marconi or Armstrong or DeForest. However, we do have the chance to speak with someone who's not only very knowledgeable about the subject of AM radio transmission, but has personally done a lot to improve the quality of AM transmissions on many of the radio stations throughout the United States, Canada, and even the world. The gentleman's name is Leonard Kahn from Kahn Communications, and if the name sounds familiar, think of Kahn AM Stereo, a format of AM radio transmission in stereo, which came out in the late 70s, and in my humble opinion, is a very good system. We're going to be talking about PowerSide, something new, and about AM stereo, and a lot more, so stay tuned as we talk with Leonard Kahn about PowerSide. If I'm understanding your AM system and the PowerSide system correctly, the technology and the theory behind that development has gone back more than a couple decades. Is that true?
Yes. It goes back in a way to the compatible single sideband development that we did many years ago. But it's a funny thing. What's happened, CSSB was a method that we developed to produce a linear envelope, yet with most of the energy in one sideband. And if we should have pushed it at the time, we got some good support. And indeed, the system has been used by Airphone. We developed equipment for Airphone. So that's one application. There have been some others. But in broadcasting, the advent of the... I don't want to use any foul language, but the typical AM receiver that's been developed is such that the poor broadcasters had to start using an awful lot of pre-emphasis, which is not, if you do the analysis of AM, it's wrong. Unlike FM, where there's a noise triangle, pre-emphasis on AM is really a bad move, except for one thing. If you have an atrocious receiver, then you're forced to do some pre-emphasis to sound like any degree of quality. So suddenly pre-emphasis became the thing, and PowerSide is a wave that has a linear envelope and is signal sideband in many respects, but it also puts the pre-emphasis on the weak sideband so that listeners can tune over.
Okay, so basically what you're doing is it's not sideband in the premises an amateur radio operator would think of sideband, but... you're basically taking, we'll use a frequency of, say, 1200, and if you wanted to get more signal out on the upper sideband, you'd bring up more signal on the upper and lower the lower sideband.
Let me give you in a nutshell.
Okay.
We take the wave is generated so that the desired selected sideband is at lower frequencies, 15 dB, stronger than the upper. Not more, not less. It's fairly accurately set by the mathematics of the situation. And then the pre-emphasis is placed on the weaker sideband. So when you get to about 5 kilohertz, there is no appreciable difference between the two sidebands, and when you get out a little bit further, it looks exactly like an AM double sideband wave.
Okay.
So it's quite different, but the difference present some startling advantages. And the reason for this is an AM wave is a very poorly designed wave when you think about it, because the two sidebands, FM is worse actually, but AM is bad enough. The two sidebands being equal, when the carrier the relative phase between the carrier and sidebands is shifted 90 degrees, and they do that all the time in fading and also antenna nulls and radiation from buildings, all those good things, you convert the AM wave to a quadrature modulated wave, which is really essentially a phase modulated wave, and you eliminate all of the fundamental component, so you've got a fully distorted wave. It's 100% distorted, and people hear that sort of wave and think they're hearing a loss of carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And really what they're hearing is a phase rotation long before you have any amplitude problems in propagation. You will have phase. It's very, very much more important is the phase perturbations than the amplitude perturbations. Let me explain the best way I know of explaining what's going on in this system is what it does with co-channel interference. As you know, most people that you hear that that beating, that low-frequency beating.
Right.
Everybody, including myself and people at RCA Labs when I was there, what I like to think of the best engineers in the business, always thought that was a carrier beat.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all wrong, because it isn't. If it were a carrier beat, the carrier, one or two hertz today, you know, the carriers are well controlled, that would not get through an audio amplifier. Well, except if you DC coupled the amplifier, but the normal amplifier would not pass one or two hertz. And even if it did, the loudspeaker that would reproduce one or two hertz would be huge, enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it could, your ear does not respond to one or two hertz. You can feel one or two hertz, but you can't hear it.
Right.
So it isn't, that isn't the carrier beat. What it is a sideband beat. And let me explain that. Suppose you you have a station, and your station is stronger than the incoming interference.
Okay.
Let's say it's 25 dB. Let's say it's, which is the FCC spec. Let's say it's 26 to make it easy.
Okay.
That means that you are 20 times, your carrier voltage is 20 times the interfering carrier voltage. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That means if, let's say you turn off your modulation, you go dead, but leave the carrier on, and you turn to your signal with a normal receiver, any kind of receiver, the normal being a regular diode detector, but whatever kind of detector you have, product demodulator, exalted carrier, you know, whatever you're using, except a local carrier, that wouldn't be fair, but any other kind of received carrier, what you would get would be a, even if you had local carrier, if you synchronized it to the strong signal, you'd be okay with this analysis. Your carrier, say, is one hertz higher than the interfering signal's carrier.
Mm-hmm.
If you demodulate their lower sideband, all of the components in the lower sideband would be one hertz high. 100 hertz would be 101, 1,000 hertz would be 1001 and so forth.
Okay.
Everything would be translated. It's frequency translation by 1 hertz, and it would be higher. The demodulation of the upper sideband, conversely, would be 1 hertz low.
Mm-hmm.
So you have two audio waves, each one of them sufficient to get good intelligibility, but each one of them off in frequency. So now you've got two waves that are 2 hertz apart, and they will go right through the audio amplifier, because they're audio frequencies.
Right.
Right through the speaker, because the speaker is in your ears, obviously can hear those that frequency range, but at one instant, you'd have full voltage, the sidebands would be in phase, in effect, and you'd get twice the voltage, and everything would sound great. A little later, half a second, a quarter of a second, because it's 2 hertz, later, you would end up, it's an eighth, you know, it's 180 degrees on out of 2 hertz.
Mm-hmm.
That time period, it would be completely out of phase and completely cancel.
Right.
So that's what you're hearing, that beat.
Okay.
Now, if you make the two signals different by, say, 15 dB, the way we do for the predominant frequencies, you can hear, if you stick a tone on, you can hear a slight motion.
Mm-hmm.
In voice and music, not at all. And that's the astonishing thing. If you listen to a signal, a distant signal with on co-channel, and if one of those stations has power side, you will hear no beat whatsoever.
Hmm.
From that station, if they're both on power side, even if they're on the same sideband, no beat whatsoever.
Okay.
From either one.
Now, this technology that you're using to derive this type of signal,
mm-hmm.
At least in our area here, there's a lot of transmitters manufactured by Gates, like the Gates BC1H,
right.
The 1G, the RCA BTA1R3.
Mm-hmm.
How hard is it to install one of those systems into one of those transmitters?
Piece of cake. We do them overnight.
Really?
Uh-huh. The surgery is very easy. We've never had a transmitter. You see, those are easy transmitters. We've had Ampliphase, Surex,
mm-hmm.
which is a superb invention, many, many years ago, before high-level modulation. The Frenchman did a superb job. It's outphasing two Class C amplifiers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That technique is hard. We've done it on it. We've done it on Doherty's. We've done it. We've never met a transmitter we didn't like.
Well, what's your power side unit? Is that also an exciter as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's essentially what it is. It's a stereo exciter the way we do it, and we have an audio box that goes with our normal STR-E4. Where we do all the filtering and the phase shifting, all that extremely accurately. It has to be done precisely because, as you know, broadcasters talk, get very uptight if you put a half a percent distortion into them.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very, very, it's very carefully done. And it gives you all these advantages, as I just mentioned.
Is there any consideration taken in the design of power side to, say, the non-linearity of antenna systems for stations who have multi-tower arrays?
That's a great question. I appreciate that question. We have another system that's just coming in now, and you're going to be hearing an awful lot about it. It's on presently on with our power side on in Radio Monte Carlo, multi-million watt station in, I believe, the largest station in the world on the low band, low frequency band, 216 kilohertz.
Mm-hmm.
And they, as you might expect, their antenna is kind of narrow. And the lower the frequency, the more difficult an antenna is, as you know. It's a percentage bandwidth business.
Right.
And we put that on, and very, very precisely fixed their antenna, made it perfectly flat. And I say, when I say perfectly, within a tenth of a dB.
Really?
Over its full audio range. We've done something just in the New York area, just the last couple of months. I don't know whether the station wants the publicity as yet, but we will have a number of stations on with the flatterer. Because, and this is the astonishing thing about it, it not only broadbands the antenna, but it increases the radiation efficiency of the station. And increases, meaning it increases the radiated energy, the efficiency of the antenna itself. We're very, very excited about this, and we have stations going on with this now. There'll be one in San Francisco as soon as we can build the equipment. There'll be one in Florida, another in Florida, and there will be there's a number of them coming in.
With this this type of technology, how hard is it for, say, your normal engineer at a radio station to be able to make the measurements and set up this equipment? Is it really hard or fairly simple?
Well, the flatterer is kind of a complicated thing in comparison with, and I don't want to say that the power size isn't either.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been very lucky to deal with very good engineers. The stations that come in first on new technology generally have good engineering support.
Right.
And so we've been fortunate, but we've had power side on some very small stations who couldn't afford to do a lot of engineering, and they've been able to handle it very well. We closely support our equipment, though. It is, I'd be misleading anybody to say it wasn't complex equipment. But we do our best to make it, human engineered. People like to say user friendly. Well, we believe in that, because if it isn't, then we get problems. And it's important to us that our customers like what they have and, say good, kindly things about us.
Right. With, with the power side system, a lot of us old AM radio engineers, the first question which would come to mind is, what about the legalities of taking your AM signal and offsetting the sidebands? Is there any problem with that?
Oh, no. That's Motorola, one of our arch competitor in the scheme of things, went to the commission and tried to knock this out, because we were doing a very effective job in marketing this now. Like in the New York area, you can hear 12 or 13 stations using PowerSide.
Mm-hmm.
As you turn up and down the band. In the report in order that gave Motorola AM stereo, and we hope that this will be not permanent, because I really do believe, as an engineer now, forget it as a competitor, that their system is certainly not ideal. And but on the page 5 of the report in order, there is two paragraphs, but maintaining the power side. And the title is Cohen Power Side Operation, and then it said several parties expressed concern over the continued acceptability under our rules of operating using the Cohen Power Side AM stereo sideband system. And then they go on to talk about the support from broadcasters on who are using it, were concerned that they'd have to stop using it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it finally, the final sentence in that paragraph, Motorola maintains that Cohen Power Side mode of operation is not stereophonic and questions its legality under the present rules. Then paragraph 22 provides their opinion, and they say that on this basis, we find stations employing the Cohen Power Side system are not subject to the provisions of the stereophonic transmitting standard adopted herein and may continue to be operated, provided that the program material fed to both channels of the exciter is identical in content. And the reason they did that, if you do feed stereo to Power Side, you get a very satisfactory stereo sound.
Oh, okay.
And that's, but God forbid that people hear good stereo in the United States.
Oh.
It is funny. Canada did the identical thing.
Well, I you know, I have to laugh only because, you know, with this interview, you're talking to one organization which deals a lot with radio listening. The members of the National Radio Club and the DX Audio Service are people who listen to radio as a hobby and listen to it professionally, and especially AM radio. And I guess that kind of swings me into the next question here, which is back in, September 23 of 1982, I got a letter here from you, and you mentioned several manufacturers of radios, such as McKay Dimec, Mura Corporation. Who is now making real good AM receivers that really can pick up the fidelity of a station?
Nobody. And it's, I shouldn't say that. There's some, GE has made a radio that sounds very, very good in comparison to the stuff that should be made. But honestly, in comparison to what can be made, nobody. And I find we've made radios just for broadcasters,
mm-hmm.
and inexpensive, and they end up using them as monitors because we use good frequency response, we use good selectivity, and it's all very inexpensive to do, and you just have to make your measurements and then listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I find this incredible that radios come out. Sony was making some very nice radios. Now, there were some deficiencies in terms of reliability in many of the Japanese equipments, but they did a superb job in frequency response and doing it properly. They had, what was it, 16 models of radios, including clock radios and using AM stereo.
Right.
And using compatible with our system. Sony favored our system, and but also compatible with even the other systems.
Well, see,
and Motorola went and then threatened Sony, and that was the end of that.
Well, see, I remember that the Sony made the SRF A100. I had that radio, and here in Ohio, I could pick up WQXR very, very well, and it was a good-sounding radio, and even some of the stations that were just using the old Gates Level Devils and stuff like that even sounded good.
Yeah, then, you still can hear WQXR, and they're now WQEW on our system.
That's Power Sign?
No.
Oh.
On True Stereo.
Okay.
They have taken a stand, just like KSL in Salt Lake City During the day, they're on our system of AM stereo. At night, they go to Powerside.
Okay. And is that to kind of resolve interference between them and WJJD in Chicago?
No. Originally, they put it in to get away from the jamming that KVOO was doing with the other Motorola system.
Hmm.
They had to. They were being spotted. You know, KSL covers forever and wants to. It's owned by the Mormon Church, and they're serious about getting their signal all over the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And but later, WJJD came on,
mm-hmm.
and they put on Powerside and took the other side to resolve their problem, because KSL was the clear channel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the sequence of events, and JJD is now on at night. They will be on full time. They didn't need it as much during the day,
mm-hmm.
but they want it. It just they have a transmitter that they're getting a new transmitter, and they didn't do. There were practical things about operating with. They needed another Powerside system, and I assume they will be getting one shortly.
If you have a, let's suppose I go out and I buy a radio station tomorrow. It's just a little AM 250 watt station, and I'm just going to pick a name out of the hat here, using a compeller audio processing system and an old Gates BC250GY.
Mm-hmm.
I put Powerside in. Mm-hmm. What can I expect as far as my clarity out in the fringe areas with that signal?
All right, I got brand new information on that. A station in Denver just went on Powerside. They are 1390, I believe. They are at day are 5 kilowatts. At night they're 130 watts, 125, 130 watts. They put Powerside on, and people in town, broadcasters, who, you know, listen carefully to what competition is doing, have reported back, and I don't mean one, I mean three, that the coverage of the station was up over 50%, and at night, with the 130 watts, they were covering better than they were... they were once Sequam, by the way,
mm-hmm.
earlier, but even when they took off the Sequam, which instantly increases coverage, but with AM, the Powerside increased the coverage to where they were not listenable with the 5kW. They are now listenable with 125, 30 watts.
That sounds real good.
Yeah. Now, one thing is negative. Two things. One is the price. It's not inexpensive equipment.
Yeah. What is what is price?
Well, the price, and I'm hemming and hawing, but of course, we try and sell reconditioned equipment to real little guys,
mm-hmm.
because. But the price is approximately $16,000, brand new equipment. But we find used equipment occasionally, and we try and do that with only little guys, not with the big stations. That's ridiculous. And the other problem is you can't clip ahead of it,
mm-hmm.
because of the networks that are in the Powerside unit. They would put tilt. They not would, will put tilt, and that tilt will reduce the ability to modulate. So you have to put your clipping in our special ports, or in the transmitter itself, or use our clippers, which are a little better than most clippers being produced. We add a little circuitry to it. Otherwise, you get the tilt.
Okay. So
other than that, there's no drawbacks as far as I know.
Okay, so if I'm understanding you correctly, if let's say I had just a normal, say, Optimod AM system, I would defeed the clippers and the limiters in the unit and let your unit do the clipping and limiting?
Yeah. Do all the compression you like.
Okay.
In Orband or Duro or whoever, but no clipping ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We have audio processing, but there's plenty of good audio processing out there. Use what they've got.
Leonard, I'd like to thank you for talking with us. It's been very informative. I've found out a lot of information about PowerSide that I really didn't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting subject. It grows on you. And actually, I've learned more and more about this every time. I'm frankly amazed that some of the improvements that I really didn't figure out.
Mm-hmm.
They just, it's been a very, very lucky development, but I get lucky occasionally.
Well, I wish that you'd have beat out Motorola on that.
It ain't over. don't worry. Things, you know, I have great faith in the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And the government, and I've also got great faith in our form of government where we have freedom to do things, and there's no technological reason for giving Motorola a monopoly. It's not. It's against our economic system, and it will turn around. Always, always. Their technology never survives.
I hope so. I hope it. Tobin does turn around because just the listening, like I said, to the AM radio as much as I do, and as much as a lot of the people in the club do. I there is a definite difference, and. I don't know how the non-technical person can explain it.
You know why the major difference, why the mono sounds so bad?
Why is that?
Spectrum. They're so wide in spectrum that the receiver just takes out a certain amount. And what it doesn't pass ends up not only as lost high frequencies, but distortion. You can't take a radio wave.
Mm-hmm.
Not pass all of its components if those components are necessary, and that's why the mono sounds. Forget the platform motion or that. The mono is what's killing them. And the joke is in San Francisco, for example. Somebody, this group that just bought the equipment, said they had a Motorola station. They were on music, and they changed format, and they decided we don't need stereo for the all talk. When they switched, he said, "You won't believe this, their coverage shot up." Now, the reason that's so startling, as you know, music, and this was, modern music with lots of modulation, should always cover better than talk.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have syllabic variations, and you have the sibilants that are easy to get into trouble with noise.
Mm-hmm.
That suddenly, so it went, instead of getting a worse coverage, the coverage shot up. He said nobody could believe it. Now, every engineer in San Francisco knows about this. You can't keep it. The same thing in New York. WBBR, the old WNEW was on Motorola.
Mm-hmm.
When the BBR, which is financial news, took over, they left it in.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't hear them in Call Place where I am.
Hmm.
You just couldn't listen to it. It was all, and so they took it off, and everybody said, "Wow, what an improvement on the mono."
Yeah.
Forget the stereo. And that's what people are going to do until stereo gets on the right path again, and it will.
I'd like to thank Leonard Kahn for talking with us about AM stereo, also about his system called PowerSide, and also a brief mention about the Flatterer system, some interesting technology which is available to AM radio stations. Also like to thank Leonard for all his work and his support in trying to make AM radio sound good. And I have to agree with Leonard that there are just not enough manufacturers out there to sufficiently build the receivers. The technology is there, folks. Let's put it this way. The technology is there, but the manufacturers just do not want to build a quality AM radio set. And it's kind of a shame, because once you hear how good the radio can sound, it really makes you wonder why there's not more being done. After doing the interview with Leonard Kahn, I did some listening comparisons on WJJD, which is on 1160 kilohertz in Chicago, Illinois. I did the listening on several different receivers. It's interesting to note that during these tests, I have a station here in Lima, Ohio, which is on 1150 kilohertz. Their transmitter site is 4.6 miles to the south of me, and during the nighttime, they run a directional pattern which is straight north. So I was getting pounded by a pretty vicious signal on 1150. Now, using the Sony ICF-2010 receiver in the synchronous mode and selecting the upper sideband, I had no problem in being able to copy WJJD. There was occasional modulation spurs which would come up on WJJD signal. However, it was completely copyable. Now, was it a armchair copy, would you call it? Well, not exactly. There was just enough interference in there that it ruined it. But considering the fact that you have a strong signal on 1150 and you're trying to listen to a station on 1160, it was more than adequate. And was it better than, say, a station not running power side? I think absolutely yes, because in taking a field strength meter and monitoring the station on 1140 and then monitoring WJJD on 1160, both stations had pretty much the same carrier strength. The station on 1140 was not audible at all. WJJD was. Now, in listening to WJJD on a McKay-Dimeck receiver and also on a Super Radio 3, I was really unable to copy WJJD good enough to be able to pull out bits of information, say, if I wanted to log them for a QSL report. But the Sony ICF-2010 did perform very well, and I was able to completely demodulate WJJD to be able to understand exactly what was going on. And speaking of the Super Radio 3, we've had several people and members and listeners of the DX Audio Service make comments concerning the Super Radio 3, which is manufactured by General Electric. And up till now, we've not had any comments from the broadcasters. Well, Warren Schultz, who is the chief engineer for WLS AM and FM in Chicago, Illinois, wrote an interesting piece in a SBE magazine entitled Great Sounding AM Radio for $45. And it reads as follows. You might have read about the GE Super Radio 3, which is model number 7-2887 in a past issue of Radio World magazine. The article supported the performance of the $45 consumer table radio. During a recent conversation with a Cap Cities ABC allocations engineer in New York City, he raved about the Super Radio 3. Sure enough, after a trip to Best Buy, I was the proud owner of the Super Radio. Separate bass and treble controls make full fidelity AM reception possible. Besides a full range speaker system, 6-inch woofer and 2-inch tweeter, this boxy receiver has an AM bandwidth control. Other than the Denton AMAX radio, this is the only consumer radio that I'm aware of that has a bandwidth control. A Potomac monitor receiver, model SMR-11, has a bandwidth control. However, it costs around $1,500. The Super Radio 3 is an AM-FM mono receiver with distinguishing features such as AM bandwidth control, cut and boost treble, cut and boost bass, switchable FM AFC, power switch separate from the volume control, 8-inch ferrite rod antenna, 12-inch long dial, AM band expanded to 1710 kHz, external AM and FM antenna connections, and 6 D-cell battery operation for approximately 500 hours of play time. Now, how does it perform? You will not believe the AM reception quality obtained on a strong signal station in the wide mode. the treble control at full will actually reveal high-frequency response. You can make a valid comparison on such simulcasted stations such as WLS Talk Radio AM and FM. In the narrow mode, the nighttime performance will blow you away. The ferrite rod's position is only critical when trying to null interference. The FM section is great. AFC tuning action is snappy and does not feel like a tuning control is driven by a rubber band. Strong local signals are no problems. The front end does not exhibit problems with spurious image response from strong local stations versus distant ones. Anyone with an interest in AM survival should own one of these radios and promote others to do likewise. This is probably the best receiver made since the vacuum tube days. It is the radio that you would want to take with you to the bomb shelter. I could recommend a better 10 kHz whistle filter, AM-FM stereo operation, and clock radio function at twice the price, but what do you expect for $45? It does make you believe that AM radio can deliver. It is too bad it has taken all this time for a manufacturer to bring this performance back to the marketplace. I can only wonder if the Super Radio 3 will survive in the retail marketplace. This from Warren Schultz, chief engineer of WLS. Next up, we're going to be talking with some blind broadcasters about what they do with their radio station and a little bit of how they get along with technology, which has been for a long time in the sighted world. We're going to be talking with a gentleman by the name of Bob Ohm, who is the news director of a radio station which is located in Delphus, Ohio, WDOH FM 107.1. And we're also going to be talking with DX Audio Service member Mike Dukin, who's up at WOJB. And we're going to talk about all kinds of different things. Mike's going to be on the phone and Bob's going to be in the studio. So let's get on with a little interesting topic here. But first, on the remainder of this tape, let's listen to these guys in action right here on the DX Audio Service.
Bring us to our time of 2:47:13 before the hour of 2 o'clock and, of course, the Friday show. And don't you know, you're going to lose a good thing. It's Barbara Lynn on the program. Got some rockin' stuff from Motown coming up. The Miracles, Four Tops, Junior Walker, Tyrone Davis, people like that. Junior Walker and the All-Stars got to hold on to this feeling. 301 at FM 89, WOJB Reserve, listener-supported Woodland Community Radio with Tyrone Davis.
Oh, darling, I love you. Girl, I need you.
Music of Tyrone Davis from Chicago, turning back the hands of time. And before that, Junior Walker and the All-Stars, a couple of sound-alike songs. I like to do that. And of course, Junior Walker doing Gotta Hold On to This Feeling here on the program. And you're hearing it, of course, on the Friday show. 4 minutes past the hour, 3 o'clock. Temperature outside is 53 degrees. Sunny skies in the forecast. Highs to be between 50 and 55 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy skies with lows to be in the mid to upper 30s. And for tomorrow, another sunny day, but tomorrow's high will be between 55 and 60 degrees, so it'll be a little bit warmer.
Every word he says.
This is news from the new winning 107 WDOH Delphus. Good morning, I'm Bob Ohm reporting here on this Sunday morning for the Commercial Bank of Delphus, Elida, and Gomer. A 16-year-old boy from Findlay is being held by authorities in Allen County on charges that will include fleeing police, driving without a license, and reckless operation following a high-speed chase that began at 3:25 this morning on Interstate 75 just north of Blue Lick Road in Allen County and ended moments later when the car the teen was driving ran into road spikes placed on the interstate at the north edge of Wapakoneta. A patrol spokesman says the original pursuit started because the 16-year-old was traveling 7 miles over the speed limit, but speeds during the chase reached 100 miles per hour before the chase came to an end without incident. 13 and 14-year-old boys from the Findlay area arrested in the car as well when it was stopped, be released to the custody of their parents pending the filing of charges against them this week. You can expect to hear a lot more about the war against the drunk driver in the coming year. The group Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, or MAD, is meeting a national convention in Chicago. They vowed to work to reduce the number of alcohol-related highway deaths by 3,000 a year by the year 2000. MAD President Becky Brown.
MAD has a goal of 20 by 2000, and that goal means that we are challenging America to reduce the proportion of alcohol-related fatalities by 20% by the year 2000.
MAD says 17,699 people died in alcohol-related accidents in the past year alone. Now, this message.
Personal service means different things to different people. Member FDIC, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Here is the National Weather Service Sunday morning forecast for Northwest and West Central Ohio. Sunshine today. Temperatures warmer. Winds a little less of a factor than yesterday. Highs expected in the upper 30s this afternoon. West winds 5 to 15 miles per hour, shifting to the southwest to allow those slightly warmer temperatures in across the region. Tonight, partly cloudy. Not so cold. A low in the upper 20s. Southerly winds 10 miles per hour or less. Tomorrow, Monday, you head back to work with cloudy skies, warmer temperatures, high as tomorrow in the middle 40s. No mention of any precipitation in the forecast until tomorrow night. Right now in downtown Delphis, it's 16 chilly degrees, enough wind to make it feel like it's around 10 above out there. This news brought to you by the Commercial Bank of Delphis, Elida, and Gomer. I'm Bob Ulm reporting.
Now at Lima's American Mall.
It's time now on Winning 107 for the area's most comprehensive Sunday morning look at all the...